This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
We're 32 games into the season, and we can measure the Cubs against some of the best teams in baseball because they've played some of the best teams in baseball. But this is your first chance to measure them against, I think we all still expect to be the rival in the division. The Brewers have been the rival for a while.
There's a deep drive into right center field. Off the bat of Pete Crow Armstrong. This ball's going to leave the yard. A home run for PCA, and the Cubs lead 9-0. And it's wonderful to see Pete Crow Armstrong hit one deep into right field. Second deck and second homer of the game for Pete Crow Armstrong. Swinging a drive, right center field and deep. Back toward the wall, that ball is going to be gone. Three-run homer, Pete Crow Armstrong.
This is star-level production, no question about it. Like I said, it's been the power lately, but what great players can affect the game is in a lot of ways, and Pete has that ability, and some days it's the defense, some days it's the base running.
Bestman counts his MO for me. He's never wanted me to do anything but be myself. I think he's just given me a chance to see how I fit in with this team over the last couple years, and I think we all talked about it a lot last year where I had a lot of opportunity to fail, and they gave me some real good time to find my footing.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is the Spiegel and Holmes show. Full show for us today. We'll go until 6 o'clock on the show today because it's been weird. The Cubs have been a little east and all of that stuff. So, Alex is flying the plane today, and then one of the Tylers, Farrengal.
That's who it is.
He is in for Tanny.
Couldn't figure it out.
Because Tanny has got the day off today.
Tanny's still in Disneyland with...
I thought Disney World.
Yeah, one of the Disneys. Is it?
It's Disney World. Disney Europe is where he's at.
He's the one, and the one in Florida. That's the world.
That's right? World, right? And then land is in California.
I believe this is Juju's third time at Disney World before she's the age of 11.
Good for her.
Impressive.
She is living the life.
She really is, and deserves it.
They like it down there. You go and have a good time.
Sorry.
I wandered into Disneyland once because Zach and I were calling a DePaul game in Anaheim in a tournament. And I was like, oh, that's Disneyland. Just went on in there.
I was there. I was there a couple of times with the Roobster. Big fan of Disneyland out there. We did Disneyland twice and did Universal out there in L.A. one time, which was tremendous. I've never done the world, though. The world seems a little daunting, frankly. It's a little big. There's a lot going on down there.
I mean, you could spend a lot of days there, and that's what Tanny's doing. And damn it, he deserves it. That man is Matt Spiegel.
Hello!
Here's what we got planned for you today. Cliff Floyd is going to talk ball with us at 3:30. So is Steve Stone, but that's at 4:25 on today's show. We'll also do a little NBA roundup before we are done with today's show. But we start with the biggest news on the Chicago sports agenda over the last 24 hours, has been the injury to Shota Imanaga, a hamstring strain of some sort that isn't related to the cramps, maybe, and he might only miss one start, but probably not. Go.
The cramp was in the right quad. This is a left hamstring strain, but all I can picture is him in the wave pool with the shower cap and the glasses on, the goggles that Nico was telling us about the other day. But he's a very thick and strong man in the thigh area. But as he was running over to first there to cover, and he was hauling ass.
He was busting it to first base.
Absolutely. Respect on hauling ass. But last year, Justin Steele had the hamstring strain that he did on opening night on the first Sunday night, and he missed a month.
He sure did.
I'll be surprised if Shota misses less than a month.
The other thing that I worry about, and the reason why I put the question mark on not connected to the cramping thing, is you just wonder about the kinetic aspect of this, of what's been going on with the other leg, and if there's compensation and all of the other things that you end up getting off balance for whatever reason. And then, boom.
It's a really good point, because there's very few things in sports that are as challenging and unnatural as throwing a baseball as many times as you have to, and just the full body exertion that it goes through.
And baseball specifically is what they call an anaerobic sport, like the idea of you're running, you stop, you're mm-hmm. running, you stop. And trying to keep people healthy throughout 162 games can often be difficult. And that's before we start talking about the arm and everything that goes along with the arm. Now, luckily, there's nothing wrong with Shota's arm, but his base being messed up and off balance for the last couple of starts is scary.
Well, what's going on now is that you've got one of the greatest stories in baseball, which is the Cubs being no lower than third in just about everybody's estimation and power rankings all around MLB. The offense is completely legit. We know that. We can see that. They finally get division foes, and they take 2 out of 3 in Milwaukee. PCA is an emerging, evolving superstar before our eyes. Kyle Tucker's the best player they've had on this team since before Chris Bryant. Like, and he and PCA might rival each other
War standings say different.
Yeah.
War standings right now say it's PCA.
I'll take the proven track record of pitch selection for Kyle Tucker.
Who are the two teams you have in the mix with the Cubs? Because in my mind, I went Cubs, Dodgers, Padres.
I've got the Mets up there.
You got the Mets in there, who the Cubs will see later on this week.
I think the Mets are, as Tyler Kepner wrote about them last week, they're now a bully with brains. You've talked about wanting the Cubs to bully people.
Yeah, bully these hoes.
And Steve Cohen bullies people, but now the brains, David Stearns, lets him do it smart.
By the way, a team that's probably right there, they're going to face tonight. The Giants.
The Giants are certainly top 10. Arizona's top 10. The Padres, obviously, top 10. There's four in the NL West.
And I mean,
No.
They're still stuck on 6 wins.
But what's interesting about where the Cubs are is that they're now without their top 2 starting pitchers. When everybody thought that they could probably use one more bat-missing quality ace pitcher, even at the beginning of the year, if they had been able to sign one more. And now you've got a decay of depth, because Javier Assad was probably going to be your 5 at the beginning of the year, and Colin Ray would have been the long man. Now Colin Ray is entrenched in your rotation and you need him. Ben Brown has to stay entrenched in the rotation, and he should after that great performance Friday night. Jordan Wicks has been terrible at AAA and bad when he was called up here. And now without Shota and without Steele, do you make a trade right away, or do you bring up Cade Horton? And you've reached this inflection point with your number one pitching prospect a hell of a lot sooner than you would have liked to. You are there right now having to decide whether it's Cade Horton or whether you give Chris Flexen a spot start this weekend against the Mets.
I kept thinking about that last night. I did NBC, and Mike Berman, shout out to everyone over at NBC5, he asked me about that, and I kept thinking about Chris Flexen. And I kept thinking, sure, having him be a bulk guy in your bullpen makes sense.
Every team needs one.
But until you figure out your strategy, I don't have a problem with them saying, all right, Chris, here's the ball. And granted, you are playing a really tough week this week with the Giants and the Mets. But I found myself being like, at least give him an opportunity to start the next time that Shota's turn. If Shota's not going to be available, start his next start and see where you're at. When Justin Steele got hurt, my first reflex was they got to do something. And so it's weird because I found myself being like, well, I guess the reason I thought that about Steele was because of how daunting that first month has been. Cubs have been better than fine. They've been good. They've been one of the best teams in baseball through this gauntlet of a schedule that they've had early on. I don't think that they should be in a rush, but I do think, hey, go look around. Maybe the Rockies have someone of value. Maybe the White Sox have someone of value. But the problem is that you got to find a team that's clearly out of it and doesn't think they're going to be in it.
It's too early.
That's why I only mentioned the Rockies and the White Sox.
Yeah, there's very few. I mean, it's early to get Sandy Alcantara away from the Marlins. I think it's early to do that. It's early to get to try and get Sonny Gray. Some of these teams still believe that they can do it. To me, it's like right now, is it Cade Horton time or not?
And
I think he's ready. He's now made 11 starts at AAA. This year he's made 6 starts. He's got a 1.24 ERA. The issue has been the walks, but he's got 3 straight starts now of just one walk. Does Cade Horton. The strikeouts are there. Last 2 starts, he's went 6 innings and 80 pitches. I think he's ready, but
okay,
I don't know for sure if they think he's ready.
Let me ask you a question to the concept of ready.
Okay.
I think that everything that you said about Cade Horton does help, and his body of work makes the case for promotion. Okay. Is he ready to jump in the middle of a year that the Cubs think is significant?
I think so. I think that he would have been ready last year to jump in some role. They thought about him in 23 as a possible bullpen piece. Remember Carter Hawkins, who we'll talk to tomorrow, laughing when I said, have you ever thought about him as a bullpen guy in September? And he said, what are you, Jed? What have you been talking to Jed? Because Jed thought about it. So, yeah, and I think they were counting on him for some time this year. Some time has come calling in the case of Shota's injury now compounded with Steele. To me, the question is one, and I don't know, like coming back from the injury, is there something kind of physical or biomechanical that they need to know for sure? I have no idea about that. Then the other is, do you want him to have his Major League Baseball debut on the road against the freaking Mets?
That's what I'm saying.
Or flex in for one start.
And then?
Home debut after that.
If Flexen does poorly, what if Flexen gives you 6 innings and 2 runs and 3 hits?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, we look around baseball and a lot of teams aren't waiting even this long. Spencer Strider didn't start a single game at AAA for the Braves. Spencer Schwellenbach didn't start a single game at AAA for the Braves. A.J. Smith-Shawver started, I think, 2 or 3 at AAA. Now, granted, they treat their AA like it's AAA, but it's like, I mean, this thought that you have a guy use his bullets at the big league level is kind of traveling around the game. Different teams have different strategies on this stuff. To me, it's a question of, like, do you know the kid? And if you know the kid, is he better off away from home having a start where it's not all about him, like on the road somewhere? Or is he better off starting at your place where you as an org can have full space command and full control of the circumstances? And I would lean towards that.
It's so interesting the different ways that you could think about this too, because to go back to Flexen, you go, this if we think of it not as a person but as an arm, this arm was specifically brought here to do this. This is a player where we're not really worried about his future, mm-hmm. but the present with him could be valuable. Now, it could also be a disaster if you send him out there and he's not very good. But this was a guy that gave the White Sox, what, 155, 160 innings last year? And you go, yeah, we need someone to just eat innings.
Yeah, and he,
why, if our guy, if you think that he's made it all the way through the development, if Horton has made it all the way through the development curve, and the only thing that he needs to show is, can you get major leaguers out consistently? Do you want to bring him into a season where you have expectations and you need him to kind of do a job? And it's not, it's less about his development as a major leaguer, even though this would be a cool way to be developed in the major leagues, versus him just being there to do a job for the Cubs. It's a really interesting process that they have to go through here to figure this thing out.
Jed Hoyer often speaks on the first day of a homestand, this being just a shorty little homestand with the three against the Giants before they go back out on the road. Not sure if Jed will or not, but it's convenient that Horton and Shota have timed out and pitched on the same day yesterday. I would bet that you see Horton either Friday night against the Mets at their place, or next week on Tuesday or Wednesday here against the Marlins. And if I had to bet, I'd say the latter. I'd say that you see him home against the Marlins on Tuesday the 13th or Wednesday the 14th.
So wait, there are two bets here.
Yeah.
Okay, there's the bet that he gets called up.
Yeah, no, I don't think he'll get called up until it's start time.
And then there's the bet that he makes a start.
Yeah. You think he's going to get a start at Citi Field against the Mets this weekend?
I don't know that he's going to get called up. That's why I'm looking at it as two bets.
Well, but I don't think they'll call him up until he's going to start.
No, but I'm saying, like, you're saying start either on – it's two bets. Yeah. Does he get called up?
Yeah, but
does he start on the road? Or does he start at home?
No, I think they'd leave him down instead of calling him up. They'd leave him down and give him one more little start at AAA.
I'm riding with Chris Flexen. Yeah. I can't believe I just said that.
No, I think I am too. I think it's going to be Flexen. Chris Flexen gets a revenge game against the Mets where he was for 3 years.
Yeah, he started kind of with the Mets.
Yeah. So I think Flexen will get a start there, and you'll see Cade Horton against the Marlins at home next week.
We're not done talking about the Cubs by a long shot. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about PCA at 3 o'clock, and Cliff Floyd is going to join us at 3:30. There is a White Sox thing for us to discuss, and Andrew Vaughn has not played as well as I think anyone hoped he would. What does that mean? And should he be able to block other players from coming up if you're the White Sox? We'll discuss next on The Score.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And together, we host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crime-ity.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Going home.
I definitely listened to 6-7 Score growing up, for sure. Driving around in the car with my dad, you'd always have it on.
Afternoons on The Score.
We're more focused on supporting Andrew right now. He's been one of the more unlucky hitters in baseball. You know, I know he wants greater results, you know, for the White Sox and for himself. And you know, we expect more out of him. I know he's working very hard. And, you know, our job is to get the most out of each player. And we know that there's more in the tank for Andrew. But we also know there are players, you know, throughout the organization that at some point could step up and get that opportunity, and you want to make sure that they're well positioned to do so.
Now, look, when Chris Getz talks about this, the White Sox are in a position to let Andrew Vaughn work through stuff. And we have seen seasons where he's been over or around 20 home runs. And that's what you're hoping, and maybe a little bit more. But the hitter that people thought he was coming out of college has never really manifested at the major league level. I thought that I didn't think that he was really like a 30 home run guy, Spiegs. I thought that he was going to be closer to a 370 on base guy, though. And that has not even been close to what he's been in his career, a career 305 on base percentage for Andrew Vaughn.
Number 3 overall pick in 2019, has one full year in the minors in 20, and then to the bigs he goes in 21. Last year, in a full season of 149 games, OPS under 700, that's way below average. This year in 32 games, he has the most at-bats of anybody on the White Sox roster, and his OPS is 498. The on-base percentage is 218. Just an absolutely horrific offensive year. And it pairs at a moment like this, where there's a kid named Tim Elko, who is your minor league player of the month, who just homered 8 times in 10 games and is showing crazy amounts of power as a first baseman. And you've got a fan base who's looking for more pieces. They like Edgar Caro. They like Chase Meidroth a little. They like Shane Smith. So promote Tim Elko is a cry that is going across White Sox fandom in a big, big way.
Sure. And Tim Elko's ascension shouldn't be stopped by Andrew Vaughn. But I understand the White Sox being like, what do we care if he gets 500 at-bats this season? Might it not be valuable for the White Sox to go, let's get those 500 at-bats, and let's, for all the people that are in charge of the White Sox now, for them to go, okay, now we've seen it to its conclusion, and we've worked with him, and we've given him the ideas that we have to make him a better hitter.
This is Andrew Vaughn you're talking about. So
yeah.
Ryan Fuller's had a chance to see it in full, and Getz and Barfield and everybody have a chance to see everything and know what they have.
Let's not judge him on what was going on before. Let's judge him with our eyes on him, with our instructors, and then come to a conclusion. Now, I think the conclusion is going to end up being the same.
Yeah, and they had, some of these guys were here last year, and Getz has been in the org a long time.
He has, but it's different when it's full space command, and it's an entire season and an entire off season mm-hmm. of stuff. So I just want to, like, I've never been a big Andrew Vaughn guy, but I would understand the White Sox saying, it doesn't matter. If we can end up finding out that he's a good player and we fix something that we think might be broken, it's worth it, and it doesn't cost us more than it already is going to cost
well,
us.
Well, look, I hear that, and you're in a year where you're going nowhere, and you have one more year under salary control for Andrew Vaughn. So maybe you want to see if you can catch a little fire and you can find somebody out there who wants a first baseman with offensive potential. But that's not a thing that most teams will go out there looking for.
Yeah.
They probably have 6 guys just like him.
Right. They probably have prospects that have similar profiles to him that they don't know what to do.
First base only, doesn't have 30 home run pop.
We've seen the outfield be a disaster for him.
Not interested.
We've seen, for some reason, those couple of games where he was at second base, and you're like,
yeah,
that doesn't make any sense.
So here's why it's a big topic among White Sox fans, especially right now, is that the kid Elko seems like he's ready. Vaughn has been terrible for a long time. Vaughn has minor league options left, you know? So you'd get... you got that option. And then there's this.
I don't see why you can't have them both. Because to me, that's where I'm like at, Speaks. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both of those guys can get at bats. One of them can be your first baseman. You could switch them off. One of them can be your DH. That's the beauty of a developmental season, which is this is clearly what
sure.
it is for the White Sox can give you.
But Lawrence, here's the news. A former White Sox prospect named Tyler Osick, in tweeting about promoting Tim Elko over the weekend, added this extra tweet, which he has since deleted, but has been saved for posterity. This from Tyler Osick. Quote, "I'll tell the truth here. Andrew Vaughn would be out in Arizona golfing, and we would all be grinding in Arizona at the facility in the offseason, and he'd show up 2 times per week, dumbbell press 40 pounds, take 20 swings off the machine, show up, and hit 250 with 15 bombs and 500 at-bats, and then repeat the next year." To me, that was just a slap in the face to all the people grinding to make it, given the keys to the game and took it for granted, promote Tim Elko, unquote. That is a former player calling out Andrew Vaughn publicly, saying that Andrew was mailing it in every offseason, going out and doing the same thing, and all these other guys are grinding and trying to get better like crazy, and Andrew was golfing.
Well,
woof.
When you're the number 3 overall pick
and you're handed the keys to the game,
I mean, I do wonder if there are other examples of this. Like, I don't want to just just pile on Andrew without knowing more about it and whether or not this is the truth or whether this is sour grapes.
And this certainly seems to be some bitterness from a former prospect no longer in the game. And again, he has since deleted the tweet. Our Alex Kuhn has been in touch with him, right, Alex? And he stood by the contents of the tweet.
Yes, he did get a lot of backlash, obviously, for the tweet, but he did not back off of it being the truth.
And so the broader question is if this is making fans lose faith in Chris Getz and others. They're leaving a spot for Andrew Vaughn. I don't think that that's fair.
I don't either. I don't think that that's fair at all until we see how this plays out. And I think it's probably headed towards there being a separation. But I also think there is no reason to not call up Elko if you think he's major league ready. Andrew Vaughn has done nothing that should allow him to block anybody from making it to the show. There's no argument for that. You can still get him his at-bats. Mm-hmm. If you want to go have the dumb experiment again of him having him out in left field, if you need space for other players, so be it in a season like this where you're playing for nothing.
One more small thing on Elko. He's got a very high strikeout rate down there, 29%. Maybe they're hoping and wishing that that gets lower. I'll say this. In MLB, there are 50 players at more than 25% strikeout rate right now. Like there's a lot of guys who are perfectly allowed to strike out that much as long as they're hitting bombs, and he might be one of them.
But this is the thing about the White Sox, again, as we discuss the White Sox over the last couple of years, is that just because they're bad doesn't mean that they should promote someone if they don't think that that person is ready. Like, and I think that people have gotten real comfortable with the idea of, just send everybody up. No, and look at what's happened with Colson Montgomery. The guy was like, oh, he's ready. Bring him up now. The fans deserve it. He can't hit, and he's hurt. So I don't want anyone promoted who the organization doesn't think's ready for the promotion. I want them to do it because it's organic. I want them to do it because they go, this guy has earned a promotion to the major leagues. Not, well, we have to give the fans something.
I knew that you would end up defending the White Sox. It's what you always do.
You know me. That's my MO.
It's your standard MO.
That's
White Sox apologist.
That's what I'm known for around these parts, of being fair to the White Sox.
Lawrence, let's talk about the superstar blooming right in front of us.
Carson Kelly?
I mean, pretty much.
I mean,
right?
He's been really good.
But the superstar blooming right in front of us, the glow up continues, and the way that he's being discussed by manager and teammates is very interesting.
Let's talk PCA next on The Score.
He is baseball Patrick Williams.